Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hey, good evening, everyone. I'm a recovered alcoholic called Big Book Tim.
Hey, Tim.
You hear me, Leo? All right. We left off page 111 last week in the chapter Two Wives. The last thing I read was, our next thought is that you should never tell him what he must do about his drinking. If he gets the idea that you are a nag or a killjoy, your chance of accomplishing anything useful may be zero. He will use that as an excuse to drink more. He will tell you he is misunderstood. This may lead to lonely evenings for you. He may seek someone else to console him, not always another man. And, you know, like I've been saying, the same holds true for the opposite sex. The same thing goes on. I mean, I know I've been a killjoy and a nag, even though I'm in recovery. And because when, like I said, when we're in recovery and the other person is going through this stuff, we forget that we're in recovery and we went through it too. It's amazing how it goes. So then the next thing it says, be determined that your husband's drinking is not going to spoil your relations with your children or your friends. Same thing, your wife's drinking. They need your companionship and your help. It is possible to have a full and useful life, though your husband or wife continues to drink. We know women who are unafraid, even happy under these conditions. Do not set your heart on reforming your husband. You may be unable to do so no matter how hard you try. Holds true with the wives as well. Or your significant other. Or your children, for that matter. You know, you can't really, it's just, for some reason there's that familial thing, the closest people can't help you with this. I've experienced it time and time again. I mean, you know, I've known people who are incredibly spiritual. They sponsor lots of people through the process. Not just, you know, I have lots of pigeons that I tell what to do. But people who take the time to go through this book and be transformative in other people's lives. But then with their own spouse or their own children, they are completely ineffective. You know, and to me, I think it really has to do with that deep emotional connection that you have with that other person that skews seeing the facts. You know, the facts are the facts. And a lot of times, because we don't like how the facts make us feel, we ignore the facts, right? And so that ends up happening. So it's always best to say, you know what? You go, especially if you're a couple in recovery, it's always like, you know, you have your program, I have my program, you have your network, I have my network. Maybe we'll get together for alkathons or dances or, you know, some sort of social function within the fellowship. But other than that, you know, you can't be taking each other's inventory, although we're going to, you know, and we're going to tell each other where they're wrong. Oh, you're not really doing this right today, you know. And then it becomes, well, who are you to tell me? And, well, I'm not sick today, you know. And it just becomes all that crap, right? So he says, we know these suggestions are sometimes difficult to follow, but you will save many a heartbreak if you can succeed in observing them, which are very true statements. If you're able to get to a point, now, one of the things that we talked about in our sister fellowship as the result of this kind of stuff, there's an expression calling detach with love, right? Now, we need to learn how to do that as recovering and recovered alcoholics. We need to learn how to do that. Okay? A lot of times, my experience is that we sever with anger. You know? It's just, nope, that's it. Boom, done. Right? But detaching, one of the great, like, here's what's so cool about God.
Right?
The word detach. Right? Here's a great acronym. Don't even think about controlling him or her. Like, how cool is God that works out to be like that for us? Right? Don't even think about controlling him or her. Don't even think about it. It just never works. Right? You know, and then it's the same type of thing. You know, we may win a battle once in a while. But overall, we're not going to, you know, it's just never going to happen. Right? Okay, your husband may come to appreciate your reasonableness and patience. This may lay the groundwork for a friendly talk about his alcoholic problem. Okay, same thing. Or her alcoholic problem. Right? Be sure you are not critical during such a decision. A discussion. That's funny, right? Make sure you get your canonization from Rome first. you know, and then you could sit down and hover, and maybe there'll be a nice glow around you, and then you can not be critical. Okay? So, I mean, these are obviously the high benchmarks that we're looking to try to achieve. You know, we talked about it within our within the program that's about spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. Okay? So at least if we're identifying perfection, we know what to strive toward, right? So we have a benchmark of saying, you know, like perfection for an alcoholic ultimately is not drinking. Okay? That's perfection. If your head hits the pillow at the end of the night, you had a perfect day. Even with all your screw-ups during the day, because we have a program to fix them, we have a program to work, but because when we're drinking, we're playing God, right? So when we're not drinking, when alcoholics are not drinking, we are perfectly not playing God. At any given moment that we are not drinking, we have made a perfect choice. And if you're anything like me, like I'm a perfectionist, okay? So, if I can't do it right, I'm not doing it. Right? That's how I, so if I could go, oh, you know what? Today was an awful day. You know, I was late for work. I screwed something up at work. It cost my company money. I cursed this person. I was giving people the finger on the road. I was driving like a maniac, yelling at this one. I kicked the dog, got into an argument. Wow, that was a really unspiritual day. Okay. Which really kind of proves that statement that I hate, that it's not really contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Right? Because if I have an unspiritual day like that, and God has already removed the obsession, and I don't drink, well, that means God's running the show. Right? So, I still could take solace in the fact that, you know what? I didn't make it all worse by drinking. You know? So I could at least hold on to that. Right? So let me give some instructions. Right? Try to have him bring up the subject himself. Which is excellent, excellent advice. You know, because all we have is ourselves as examples of recovery, right? We can point to other people and say, oh, yeah, them, but ultimately, if we're walking the walk, walking the talk, walking, we're leading by example and doing this thing and doing this deal, a lot of times my experience has been, in my family, almost every, like, family get-together, the subject of recovery comes up because they want to know. I'm like, how many times do you want to hear it? It's about God. You know, you got to get God. God's in charge. That's it. God. Get God. Lean on God. Everything else follows. Well, it can't really be that. I'm like, okay, so let's get into some heady stuff. And I do, for their sake. But ultimately, that's what we're talking about. You know, that process. So, the nice part about that, right? And then he says, attempt instead to put yourself in his place, right? In their place. Let him see that you want to be helpful rather than critical, right? Same thing for men. See that you want her to see that you want to be helpful and not critical. Okay? I don't know. My experience is that women are much better at that than we are, or at least they appear to be better at it than we are. You know, I think women are more nurturing in general. Okay, so they have that more acceptance of, okay, you know, whereas, like, we're like, you know what? Like, if the tables, you know, it's usually if the tables are turned, the stuff that I did before I got sober, I wouldn't put up with from some woman that I was with. Okay, I know that for a fact, and I've heard thousands of stories like that. You know, and it's throughout the book, and it says that. Okay, so when a discussion does arise, right, now, so here's some good, valuable suggestions. You might suggest hey, the secret of recovery. First three words on 112. Read this book. Right? You know how many times I tell newcomers that? I said the secret of sobriety is the first three words on 112. And at least half the time they go, oh, okay. Right? I just give you the secret to sobriety. And you're like, oh, well, I'll check it out later when I have a chance. Right? Okay. So, or at least the chapter on alcoholism. Right? So, if somebody isn't blessed with the fact that they're still, like, coherent and everything's, you know, firing on all cylinders up there, like, at least, you know, like, the chapter on alcoholism will make people go, oh, you know. People who identify as alcoholics, that chapter makes really uncomfortable. Right? Because they go, oh, yeah, that's me. Oh, yeah, that's me too. Because it describes the insanity, okay, that precedes the first drink. So, This is how to, okay, tell him how you've been worried, though perhaps needlessly. What? Wait a minute. What are you talking about, needlessly? And I say this all the time to people. I say, listen, do you believe you have a higher power in your life that runs your life and is all powerful? Yeah, absolutely. Well, don't you think they do too? Yeah, but until they get it, I'm going to rush, you know. Because that's the worry right there, right? Okay. You think you ought to know the subject better, as everyone should have a clear understanding of the risk he takes if he drinks too much. Very sound, right? Okay. Show him you have confidence in his power to stop or moderate. Say you do not want to be a wet blanket, that you only want him to take care of his health. Thus, you may succeed in interesting him in alcoholism. You may not either. Okay, but these are suggestions as to giving yourself peace of mind when you're in a place that you're not specifically with just a member who may qualify for Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the chapter about the partner in your life. That's what this is about. Okay, so that's the perspective that we're trying to get here, right? He probably has several alcoholics among his own acquaintances. Imagine that. You know, women too. They usually go out with the one, you know, you can always tell the crowd, they go out and it's usually, whee! You know, oh, them over there, okay. And you might suggest that you both take an interest in them, right? Drinkers like to help other drinkers. Your husband may be willing to talk to one of them. Okay, so it's kind of like that flanking thing we do, you know, like, you know, I'm sure if you've spent any time in recovery, and when I say any time, I mean like 6 months, right? You've been to some place within your life that there's another person that you either drank with too much or knows that you drink too much, or maybe they're ahead of you in recovery, or they're wondering why you don't drink. You know, and then you become the example. You know, there's always that kind of, we're everywhere, man. You know, it's that like that wonderful secret thing that we get going on. You know, so it's cool to have that going on, right? So, if this kind of approach does not catch your husband's interest, right, it may be best to drop the subject. But after a friendly talk, your husband will usually revive the topic himself, right? Because that's always what happens, you know. Even if it's in a negative light, right? Well, you used to be worse than me. You were drinking, oh, and now you're all holier than thou because you're not drinking and you go to those meetings and that. Which is good, right? Because obviously we've disturbed them on the subject of their alcoholism. And ultimately that's what we want to do. We want to, as I like to say, upset their apple cart, right? Because we want to get all the nice shiny ones out of the way and get down to the rotten crap to throw out. You know, I think that's, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's my job. To upset somebody's apple cart. How strong are your beliefs really? I know how strong mine are. Most of you in this room know how strong mine are. Right? So, it's a matter of, listen, my higher power, my God keeps me sober, that's it. End of story. Period. I don't do a damn thing other than get out of the way. Right? That's all I do. I get out of the way. When I'm in the way, my life's a mess. Even in recovery. When I'm out of the way, I kind of float. You know? I don't miss a meal. I get to where I need to go. I have enough gas for my car, money for tolls. I get to, you know, like, when I get out of the way and I let God run crap, it's, you know, everything works out, right? You've heard lots of my stories, like, as they go on. Okay, so, you know, the point that Bill is trying to make here to the spouse, right? He's ultimately using Lois's example, okay, of how she handled him. Because, I mean, that woman had a lot of patience, man. She had a lot of patience. And believe it or not, so did Ann Smith. Okay, if you don't know the background of Ann and Bob, right, they were together, are you ready for this? They were together for 17 years before they got married. What? That's a long engagement. You know, they make musicals about that kind of crap. You know, like, 17 years. I mean, that's some patience right there, you know? And then if you think about the origin of Alcoholics Anonymous, the first time that Bill and Bob met was on Mother's Day. Bob came home the night before, drunk as usual, with a potted plant for Anne, and they went to the Sieberlings the next day for a 15-minute talk that turned into a 6.5-hour talk, and the birth of what we're doing here. Right? That's patience, man. So he's coming from that perspective, right? So this may take patient waiting, but it will be worth it. Meanwhile, you might try to help the wife of another serious drinker. If you act upon these principles, your husband may stop or moderate, right? Now, that's tough in modern day AA as well, okay? Because a lot of times what ends up happening, because we don't really do the 12-step work that we're supposed to be doing. We don't have a long talk with the person who's closest to him, right? We don't have a long talk with his wife. We don't have a long talk with her husband. We don't have a long talk with their partner. We don't do those things. We ignore that. And why? Because it's none of their business. We don't want you talking to them. Well, how am I supposed to help you? Right? Because ultimately, like, I could be wonderfully sober and spiritual for an hour. But let me see how your life is going. Let me see. What's your wife's opinion of your sobriety? What's your husband's opinion of your sobriety? What's your partner's opinion of your sobriety? Then we'll see how spiritual you're really being. Right? Because we need to know those things. Because that's our job. To correct being spiritually off the beat. Right? So, that's what's really cool. Like, you know, watching that happen, experiencing that happen, right, of people who are not the afflicted, helping other people in such a way of understanding is really cool. Okay? It really opens up a different perspective. It helps in my own recovery. It helps in how I help people in recovery. You know, because it's how I'm affecting another person. I could see it clearly through how somebody else is affecting these people. You know, so it's real. I don't know, it's a boon to recovery as far as I'm concerned. Okay, suppose you're, however, your husband fits the description of number two. The same principles which apply to husband number one should be practiced. But after his next binge, ask him if he would really like to, what does it say? Get over drinking for good. For good. Not just for today. Right? You've heard me rant about the reservation. Just for today is a reservation. Right? That's setting yourself up for maybe. Yeah, okay, today. Yeah, you know what? I got cut back. No, for good. For good. Right? Do not ask that he do it for anyone else. Just what he'd like to. Right? That's a great entrance. See, so that's good for people like us, too, for people who are in recovery. Hey, would you like to stop drinking for good? And at least 9 times out of 10. I mean, I'll make the number higher. We'll go 18 out of 20, right? They say, yeah, well, maybe. You know, because then you know where you're at, right? You know you're fighting an uphill battle, and it talks about that and working with others how to deal with that stuff, right? Okay. The chances are he would. Show him a copy of this book. Hey, look at that, this book again. Not really important, right? And tell him what you have found out about alcoholism. Right? What you've found out. So that's really cool. So we have this wonderful book that we could give to a spouse and say, listen, read the chapter about alcoholism. Read the doctor's opinion. So you understand what alcoholism is. That you understand that it's an illness that is an obsession of the mind and a compulsion of the body coupled with a physiological aspect. Okay? That they're not jerks. It's not a behavioral problem. That it's a mental illness coupled with something that's physical. It's one of the rarest mental illnesses that's there. Okay? Because most mental illnesses don't have a substance attached to it. Right? It doesn't have that. Only addictions have that. A substance or some obsessive compulsive behavior that go along with it, that affect the brain in a particular way. Okay, so that's in this book. I'm not making that up. You know what I mean? Like, it's here. So if we have that and we understand it, and we can approach somebody that way, say, you know what? This is what I want. I understand you're sick. You know, which is great for an alcoholic. Because then they want to, you know, they want to do the, oh, I'm sick. I have a disease, I'm sick. You know, okay, well, that's good for now. Okay, let's keep them sick. Because the sicker they are, the better chance we have at getting them recovered. Right? If they still think they're not too bad yet, go play tennis or something. I don't know. Just, okay. Show him that as alcoholics, the writers of this book understand. Hey, look at that. Three times already on this page, right? Tell him some of the interesting stories you have read. You know, those things in the back of the book that really aren't part of the program because they're not in the first 164 pages. Wait a minute, what page are we on? 112. And they're talking about the stories. So I guess the whole book is the program, huh? Oh. Okay. If you think he will be shy of the spiritual remedy. Ooh, there's that word again. Very controversial. Remedy. You know what a remedy is? It's a cure. Uh-oh. He's talking about being cured again. He's talking about being recovered again. Uh-oh. He may leave the cult of AA. Ooh. Okay. Ask him to look at the chapter on alcoholism. Again, look at that. Chapter on alcoholism. Chapter 3, again. Then perhaps he will be interested enough to continue. Okay? If he is enthusiastic, your cooperation will mean a great deal. Right? If you've had that experience, it's true. If he's lukewarm or thinks he's not an alcoholic, we suggest leave him alone. Avoid urging him to follow our program. Okay, notice it says follow our program. It doesn't say, right, avoid urging him to go to meetings. Right? Because it's not about meetings, it's about the program of recovery. Going to meetings is very nice. Hopefully you'll meet somebody there that knows the program, that can take them through the program. Hopefully you know somebody in the program or in the fellowship who knows the program that can take your spouse through the program. And not just to meetings. You know, and clap for everything. Great, well, we'll have coffee. It's great. And the cookies. And I don't like them. And she don't like me either. Right? That gets people drunk or quick. I tell you. Okay. So, the seed has been planted in his mind. He knows that thousands of men, much like himself, uh-oh, what's this? Have recovered. They did what? They recovered. Past tense. Uh-oh. I thought we never recovered. Okay. But don't remind him of this after has been drinking, for he may be angry. Sooner or later, you are likely to find him, oh, look at that, reading this book once more. God, we can only hope. Okay? So, like, I mean, we do that. You know we do that. I know I've done it. What are you doing drunk again? Oh, that's right, you're an alcoholic. Yeah. Wait until repeated stumbling convinces him he must act. For the more you hurry him, the longer his recovery may be delayed. Wow, huh? Or her recovery, right? That's heavy duty right there. Like, we're telling people, hey man, lay off. Okay? Now, I've probably told this story before, but I'm going to tell it again because it was so profound that because I was angry when I heard it. Right? And I thought, like, oh, that's terrible. I was sober about 10 years. And I'm in a meeting, and some guy is talking about driving somebody to their home, quote unquote. And their home was an underpass. Right? That's where they live. And meanwhile, this particular guy had extra rooms in his house, and he wasn't going to let him stay there. And when somebody asked him why, he said, I have no right to interfere with somebody's bottom. Right? And then he said, and if his bottom is death, then that's God's will. Boy, was I ticked. Oh, how dare you? You could read it. Right? And then I realized, well, he's right. He's right. Okay? Because my experience has been, the more pillows we put under somebody's ass, the more times they're going to fall. Because they're going to think, there's always going to be a pillow there. Come on, you know it. You know the people who come back here after 6-7 days and they're back again. People who come to this meeting. I've experienced it in this meeting. People go, I'm back in 14 days, 6 days. And it's like the same person. And I was here for 4 months. Okay, so life or death, that's what we're dealing with here. Okay, so and that's in this book, that's in the chapter about alcoholism, that we're dealing with something that's a life and death illness. Okay, that you're going to be insane, and what's going to happen? Like the story of the jaywalker is in the chapter about alcoholism. You know, the guy who runs out and gets hit by cars all the time. You know, that we think has queer ideas of fun. But if we substitute alcoholism, it makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah, we do that. Okay, so we're talking about, like, the same crap. So if we're going to follow the suggestions of our own book, we need to follow the suggestions of our own book, right? And we have to have faith that God's going to take care of it. Right? There's one who has all power. And it's not Tim. I mean, that's really where I got to get to most days. Like, because I know, you know, listen, if you have any time in recovery and you're recovered, you see quite clearly what's wrong with something. It's written all, you could tell, listen, okay, you just do this and this and this and this and then poof, you're recovered. Right? It's going to take some work to get there, but if they follow directions, I say this all the time, it's like going to IKEA, you get the, you know, you get the nightstand, and it comes out with nice pretty pictures of instructions, and you follow one, two, three, and you follow it, and by the end you have a dresser. Well, it works the same way with our stuff. You follow 1 through 12, and now you're sober and recovered. Hey! But we don't need that. Why would we need that, right? Okay. If you have a husband, if you have a number 3 husband, right? Sounds like Charlie Chan, doesn't it? Number 3 husband. You may be in luck. Isn't that great? You may be in luck if you have a drunk like number 3. Okay. Being certain he wants to stop, you can go to him with this volume. Oh, look at that, the book again. It doesn't say go to him with a meeting book. Right? As joyfully as though you had struck oil. Right? I mean, you people know me. That's how I feel about this book. Right? Because I do. This is gold. This is, it's oil. It's from God. It saved my life. Thousands, millions as far as I'm concerned. And you know, the breath has to leave me to stop talking about this. Okay. He may not share your enthusiasm, but he is practically sure to, read the book. And he may go for the program at once. He may go for the program at once. It doesn't say in the book, hey, I read this book. Where are those meetings? No. He wants to do this thing, right? Okay. If he does not, you will probably not have long to wait. Again, you should not crown him. Let him decide for himself. Cheerfully see him through more sprees. Cheerfully. Yeah, go ahead, get drunk. It's all right. You want another one? Yeah, no, I'll go get you. Go ahead, it'd be great. What? We're encouraging drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous encourages drinking. Again. Right? We did it on page 31. We don't say, oh, yeah, you can't quit it. No, go freaking drink. When you're done, we'll be here. Right? Hey, get good and drunk. Okay, talk about his condition or this book. Only when he raises the issue. In some cases, it may be better to let someone outside the family do what? Present the book. They can urge action without arousing hostility. Generally not, but we're in a much better position to not do that, right? If your husband is otherwise a normal individual, your chances are good at this stage. Okay, so now when they wrote this book, you know, there were 100 of them, and most of them had the rest of their lives together. You know, they had this illness that went on, but once they were recovered gentlemen and recovered folk, They were normal people. They attended their business. They went back to work. They got back into the community. They were pillars of the community. They were productive members of society. They reinserted themselves into life. And they weren't, like, you know, hiding out in AA. They were using the example of their recovery in the real world. They were practicing the principle of the 12-step in all their affairs, in their other affairs. You know, not just being in AA all the time, you know? God. Why would you want to, right? Okay. You would suppose that men in the 4th classification would be quite hopeless. But that is not so. Many of Alcoholics Anonymous were like that. Everybody had given them up. Defeat seemed certain. Yet often such men had spectacular and powerful recoveries. Right? Well, why? Because they had God. Right? They were destitute. They were despairing. Everybody gave up. You know, like, it's not until you hit your bottom that there's only one direction. Right? And what's the, you know, the QT expression, you know, how do you know you hit your bottom? Well, when you stop digging, you know. You know, name it. You know, whatever it is. Whatever your bottom happens to be. Okay? Once you know that you're at your bottom, and you go, I give up! I retire! I'm done! Then we go, oh, thank God. Because now, we can help. Okay? But what ends up happening a lot of times? Right? You know. Within a week or so, right? You start feeling a little better. You start thinking a little clearer. You start smelling a little better. You start looking a little better. Well, you know, maybe I haven't. Then, you know, the insidiousness, the insanity, the mental illness of the disease part of it comes in. You know, like that cunning, baffling, powerful aspect of alcohol comes in. It's patient. It's jealous. I proved it. 5 days. It's been 5 days. When was the last time I went 5 days without a drink? That hasn't been since I'm 13. I got it made. I can drink again. Right? Because the ego grows back quickly. Ego. It's wonderful, right? And what's ego? Edging God out. That's the ego. Okay? Right. So, 114. There are exceptions. Some men have been so impaired by alcohol that they cannot stop. Right? Sometimes there are cases where alcoholism is complicated by other disorders. Most of the time, we have found. Okay? Most people, now, this is my thing, this is my research. Yes, I've been researching for over 2 decades. My research, my opinion, there would probably be a book someday when somebody is crazy enough to give me a grant, that the pathology, you've heard me talk about this, the pathology of addictions, all addictions, comes from post-traumatic stress. That something happened traumatic in somebody's life at the point or a few years or within that time frame of onset of initiation into the addiction, right? And the reason for that is because post-traumatic stress causes obsessive-compulsive thinking. It causes the obsessive thought. If I could do this, if I could do this, if I could do this, right? That voice in the that tells us that we have to be better at this. If only I did this. If I clean my room. If I do this, I'd be a good boy, a good girl, and mommy and daddy, and this, and all that, right? And then we find alcohol. Right now, I'm just talking about alcohol. There's a whole litany of other addictions, but for alcohol, look, I get chills just thinking about what it does. Right? That expression that you've heard me talk about. Right? That sense of ease and comfort that comes at once from taking a few drinks. That immediate love affair that we all experienced when we had that first drink and we went, ooh, ah, yeah. And the voices stopped. And the obsessive thoughts started to get hazy. And they started to numb. Okay, so alcohol started to work. And we found it. Right? And then what happens? We go too hard. We break our liver, it breaks our brain, all the stuff, right? And then the obsession. So when we're not drinking, right, we talk about this, we don't really have a drinking problem, we have a sobriety problem. Okay? Drinking is our solution. Okay? So now when we're sober, we're obsessing about, I can't wait to get to my next drink. We're usually good workers, we work really hard, we stay really focused. Why? Because we know the faster we get our crap done, the quicker we get to drinking. And people leave us alone. Because I took care of all my responsibilities. Now I can turn my head off. Right? And it's amazing to me that in almost the 15th year of the 21st century, the world is still treating this like it's a behavioral problem. Like it's like we're just bad people. You could stop. It's your fault. You did it. All the, you know how it is. You know, you've heard them all. The pointing. If you'd only. And it's like, and then nobody wants to take responsibility for the pathology. Because the trauma usually happens from parents or other adults associated with parents. That's usually where it happens. Somewhere 9, 10, 11. Somewhere around there. Maybe earlier. Okay? Because nobody wants to take responsibility for ruining another person's life. Because that's ultimately what it is. You're ruining another person's life. You know, that's a heavy burden. It's a heavy burden to take, okay? I know for me, That's probably why I don't have kids. Because I didn't want to ruin somebody's life. I wasn't prepared to be a father. I think I'd be a great father. But nevertheless, God obviously doesn't think so. Or I'd probably have kids. That's how I see it. Okay? So, I made conscious decisions not to engage in becoming a parent because I didn't want to do to my children what I experienced. Based on me repeating the same patterns of what my parents did, because I could see them clearly because I was in recovery. Okay, that's the advantage that I have. Most people don't get that advantage, unfortunately. So, most people that I've met in Alcoholics Anonymous have other issues. They have outside issues. Right? They have other co-occurring mood disorders or mental illnesses. That's been my experience. It's been very rare that I've met somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous that was strictly a drunk, strictly an alcoholic, and that was it. Including myself, I mean, I dabbled in non-conference approved substances, okay? So, but the, most people coming in today, they're poly-substance addicted. Okay, so they're coming in here, and it's, so now we have this whole, okay, so it's very, you know, some of the things, like, that's why I like when it says later on in the book, more would be revealed. Okay, so we need to kind of grow with the times, and we have, to a certain degree. Okay, but ultimately, we have to deal with this. And he gives us instructions on how to do it. A good doctor or psychiatrist can tell you whether these complications are serious. Okay? It doesn't say an AA sponsor can do it. It doesn't say his network in AA can do it. It doesn't say the person with 30 years of sobriety can do it. It says a good doctor or psychiatrist. Now notice it says a good one. Okay? Because there's a lot of crap ones out there. We all know it. We could all get our Xanax wherever we want. Because, oh, I'm feeling anxious. You know, I need something. I wake up, I'm like, oh, and I feel, oh, here's some Xanax. Thanks. Right? That's not a good doctor. And it's certainly not a good psychiatrist. For sure. Right? In any event, try to have your husband, oh, what's he got to do? He's got to read the book again. Read this book. His reaction may be one of enthusiasm. If he's already committed to an institution, but can convince you and your doctor that he means business, give him a chance to try our method. And our method is this book. It's not going to meetings. It's not don't drink and go to meetings. It's not our method. It's somebody else's method. Right? Unless the doctor thinks his mental condition too abnormal or dangerous. Right? We make this recommendation with some confidence. For years, we have been working with alcoholics committed to institutions. Since this book was first published, AA has released thousands of alcoholics from asylums and hospitals of every kind. The majority have never returned. Look at this. The power of God goes deep. Okay, so he just told us how we did it. He just told everyone, this is how we did it. God. Tough crap if you don't like it. Okay, there's lots of ways of getting sober. They are effective, but this is the one with God in it. We're not changing. As long as I'm alive, we're not. I promise you that. Okay, you may have the reverse situation on your hands. Perhaps you have a husband who is at large, but who should be committed. Some men cannot or will not get over alcoholism. When they become too dangerous, we think the kind thing is to lock them up. But of course, a good doctor should always be consulted. The wives and children of such men suffer horribly, but not more than the men themselves. I don't know. My jury's still out on that one. Really, it is. I think collectively everybody suffers. That's been my experience, right? Because a lot of times, you know, if you're in this deal and you're doing it and you're involved with somebody's family and you're involved with what they go through and you're involved with the children, you see it. You empathize, you understand, you get it. And then when you're with the person who's afflicted and you see what they're going through, you see how this particular mental illness is really kicking their butt and the torture and the anguish that they're going through, it's not greater or less than the suffering of the family. That's been my experience. Sometimes it is, because sometimes as the result of this stuff that the spouse goes and takes care of themselves, and they get well, and they get healthy, And then they're not affected by that person's alcoholism because they've already admitted that they're powerless over alcohol, that their lives have become unmanageable, and they work the program. So they get particular gifts from that, right? Because the power of God goes deep. It's important. It's awesome. All right. But sometimes you must start life anew. We know women who have done it. If such women adopt a spiritual way of life, their road will be smoother. Okay? So Bill's letting you know, hey, if you got to leave him, go. But make sure you have God. It'll make it easier. Like, that's the pattern throughout this whole thing. If you got God, things are going to be... doesn't say, hey, you got to get cash and prizes. He says, but things will be easier, right? Okay, but sometime... oh, sorry. If your husband is a drinker, you probably worry over what other people are thinking, and you hate to meet your friends. Same thing for wives, right? Or boyfriends or partners or girlfriends, right? You draw more and more into yourself, and you think everyone is talking about conditions in your home. Like, we're that important, right? Okay. You avoid the subject of drinking, even with your own parents. You do not want to tell the children. When your husband is bad, you became a trembling recluse, wishing the telephone had never been invented. Well, now we have, you know, social media that people post about their spouses and stuff. Even pictures sometimes. What was the other one? Like the picture one. You know, I'm not promoting them, but there's the picture one too. So there's both sides of it. We find that most of this embarrassment is unnecessary. While you need not discuss your husband at length, you can quietly let your friend know the nature of his illness. But you must be on guard not to embarrass or harm your husband. Okay? Now, I'll give you a perfect example. You've heard me talk about this before. My ex-wife is a diabetic, and there's been many times that through her lack of paying attention to her illness and taking care of herself, that I've had to explain to people, her family, my family, strangers, what's wrong with my wife. Okay? Sorry, she's sick. She's a diabetic. And then, you know, what happens? Isn't that amazing? Sorry, she's sick. She's a diabetic. And what happens? People go, oh, the poor thing. Is there anything I can do? Right? Then you say, now let's replace that. Sorry, she's sick. She's an alcoholic. Oh, really? Well, don't you think you're going to rehab? Don't you keep her away from drinking? And, you know, you get all that. Right? Because it's a behavioral problem, isn't it?
Right.
Okay? So it's important to be healthy within your own realm, understanding. And understand that God will give you the strength to take you through these things, right? When you have carefully explained to such people, he is a sick person, she is a sick person, you will have created a new atmosphere, hopefully, right? You know that if I'm around and that goes on, that's what happens, right? You know that I'm creating a new atmosphere. Because God forbid somebody tries to come at me with that idiotic, like, you know, like, done. You know, because you know, most of you know me, like, I'm a pit bull when it comes to, like, protecting our sick. Okay? Because there's lots of us. And that's what we're charged to do. We're given the gift of recovery. We have to help these sick people. So I'm not going to let somebody bully alcoholics. It's amazing that that's okay. Right? It sells movies. It sells television shows. That's okay. Right? You know, there's no, like, anti-alcoholic or addict bullying going on. And why? Because they're miscreants and they're lowlives and degenerates and criminals. Right? Because that's their view of it. So it's definitely up to me and up to other people in Alcoholics Anonymous to educate the general public and say, what are you talking about, you idiot? Do you know anything about it? Oh, you do? Oh, you think you know something? What'd you do, read a pamphlet? What'd you watch 60 Minutes? Like, what? You know something? Oh, okay. You know, because you know me. I'm armed with lots of facts, right? And God, right? Because those are dangerous. When you're armed with the proper facts, and you got the strength of God behind you, they're in trouble. Okay. Barriers which have sprung up between you and your friends will disappear with the growth of sympathetic understanding. You will no longer be self-conscious or feel that you must apologize as though your husband were a weak character. He may be anything but that. Your new courage, good nature, and lack of self-consciousness will do wonders for you socially. Right? I'm around people who drink all the time. All the time. My sisters, my friends of this, you know, that she's part of the PTO and there's all that going on, right? They all know I don't drink. They all know why. And it's never an issue. And sometimes when they have a little too much, they go, "Oh, I'm okay, Tim." I'm like, "I didn't say you weren't. What are you?" Maybe you're not, huh? Ooh, oh, you know, and then they get a defensive like, "Come on, you want me to get you another one?" You know, like, okay. And the same principle applies in dealing with children. Unless they actually need protection from their father, it is best not to take sides in any argument he has with them while drinking. Use your energies to promote a better understanding all around. Then that terrible tension which grips the home of every problem drinker will be lessened. Obviously, you know that the original said ex-alcoholic. Every alcoholic it said there. Every alcoholic in the original. Okay, it'll be lessened. Lessened. It doesn't say it'll go away. It'll be lessened. Frequently, you have felt obliged to tell your husband's employer and his friends that he was sick, when as a matter of fact, he was tight. You know, drunk. Right? Avoid answering these inquiries as much as you can. Whenever possible, let your husband explain. Your desire to protect him should not cause you to lie to people when they have a right to know where he is and what he is doing. Okay? So, some of that right there, you know, like, the fact of the matter is that they're sick. He's obviously sick. He's sick. So saying he's sick really isn't a lie. Okay? As far as I'm concerned, you don't need to be telling anybody anything about anybody unless it's you. Right? That's another thing. Find your business and mind it. You know, that's something that we do, right? Like, I don't need to tell. They're supposed to be in work. Well, I don't. Okay. And what would you like me to do? I'm not supposed to be there. Well, where are they? Well, you'd have to ask them when you talk to them. You know, these are the types of things that we need to do. Because if we're going to change how the world looks at it, we need to change how we look at it, right? We need to change our perception of people who are drinking and drunk and in the active throes of the addiction, that they are not bad people, that they are sick people with such a complex illness that if we don't treat it that way, it's never going to change. How is the world going to accept us if we're not going to accept us, right? I mean, Bill Wilson, he struggled for 15 years before he got sober. 15 years. You know, so it's that balance. You know, he talks about that. It's important to be balanced. It really is. Discuss this with him when he is sober and in good spirits. Ask him what you should do if he places you in such a position again, but be careful not to be resentful about the last time he did so. Okay, that you don't even need to address that kind of stuff, really. I mean, if you're working a program, then you know where you need to be, right? Okay, there is another paralyzing fear. You may be afraid your husband will lose his position. You are thinking of the disgrace and hard times which will befall you and the children. This experience may come to you, or you may have already had it several times. Should it happen again, regard it in a different light. Maybe it will prove a blessing. It may convince your husband he wants to stop drinking forever. Says it right there. Stop drinking forever. Not just for today. Forever. Right? And now you know he can stop if he will. Right? Because we have a solution. Right? Time after time, this apparent calamity has been a boon to us. For it opened up a path which led to the discovery of God. It didn't lead to the discovery of meetings. Or a coffee commitment. Or a greeter position. Or a booker. Or a secretary. I mean, those are all wonderful things, but none of that is going to keep you sober. God. It's about God. We have elsewhere remarked how much better life is when on a spiritual plane. If God can solve, look at this. If God can solve the age-old riddle of alcoholism, he can solve your problems too. Okay? He just said it again. God solved the problem of alcoholism. God cured alcoholism. If you have a solution to a problem, it's no longer a problem. If you already know that 2 plus 2 equals 4, 2 plus 2 is never a problem again. Somebody goes, do you know 2 plus 2? 4. It's that natural. Right? We have a solution for alcoholism. God! No, that's impossible. No, it's not. I'm an example of that. I know thousands of people who are examples of that. They're recovered. They're cured. Well, those are bad words, I know. But they're in this book. They're in this book. Constantly. Okay? So, we need to stop allowing people to keep us sick for the rest of our lives. Because we're not. I'm not. I haven't been sick from alcoholism for a long time. Long time. Because of God. It's really that simple. You want to break down the facts and argue, we can put it all on paper, we'll get to, you know, done. God took away my alcoholism. There are symptoms of alcoholism within AA, and there are criteria for alcohol dependence in the medical world. Okay? Once we do not fit that criteria in the medical world, we are in full remission. In long-term full remission. And it's only after 12 months in their world. Right? In our world, well, we said, no way. Right? Oh, I don't know. I'm not recovered yet. I'm not sure. Well, why not? Oh, I still think about drinking. Okay. Next. Does it run your life? Do you obsess about it? Does it compel you to drink? No, not really. Well, why not? Well, because when the thoughts come up, I just think, oh my God, I want to drink. Oh God, can you take this away from me? And I start praying and I start meditating. You mean God's in there and kind of took away your drinking, huh? Yeah, but I'm not cured or nothing. What are you talking about? When you have a cold and you took some medicine and you're no longer sneezing and coughing and itching and eyes watering, well, isn't that a cure? Yeah, oh my God. Okay, so I beat this to death because we're the examples. If we're not going to bring hope to the world, who is? You know? Okay, real quickly. As our husbands began to apply spiritual principles in their lives, we began to see the desirability of doing so too. Okay, again, the example of God in our life, I'm moving that forward. Right? At first, some of us did not believe we needed help.
They're the problem. They're the problem. I'm taking care of everything.
Right, we know how that goes, right? Okay, but then look what he does. He says, we thought on the whole we were pretty good women, pretty good men, pretty good husbands, pretty good partners, pretty good wives, right? Capable of being nicer if our husbands or our wives or our partners stopped drinking. It's their fault we're not nicer. Well, probably partly. Okay. And then he says this, but it was a silly idea that we were too good to need God. Right? Now we tried to put spiritual principles to work in every department in our lives. In every department in our lives. That's the key to it. Mm-hmm. When we do that, we find it solves our problems too. The ensuing lack of fear, worry, and hurt feelings is a wonderful thing. Now he says this. He says, we urge you to try our program. For nothing will be so helpful to your husband as the radically changed attitude toward him, which God will show you how to have. Go along with your husband if you possibly can. Right? I mean, that's huge. Huge. Because who's it about? It's about God. And how? Through the program. Through the steps, you get God. We left off on 117. Where Bill writes, we urge you to try our program, for nothing will be so helpful to your husband as the radically changed attitude toward him which God will show you how to have. Go along with your husband if you possibly can. So basically, Bill's saying, listen, now that your husband's sober, now that your wife is sober, now that your significant other is sober, you're going to be radically different. which is quite comical, I think. Because my experience has been that some people, for years, their significant other does not trust them still. Years of being sober and going to meetings and all, because I don't know, perhaps the home life isn't the same as the AA life or whatever it may be. Or that the non-afflicted, if you will, has not tried the program, you know, or there, you know, maybe there's just incompatibility, right? Okay, and then he gives it, like, this page is basically filled with lots of warnings, right? He says, if you and your husband find a solution for the pressing problem of drink, you are, of course, going to be very happy, right? Okay, so you're gonna, he's also saying there that there's a solution. Remember, I always talk about if there's a solution, the problem no longer exists, right? And he said, but all problems will not be solved at once. Seed has started to sprout in a new soil, but growth has only begun. In spite of our newfound happiness, there will be ups and downs. Many of the old problems will still be with you. This is as it should be. Okay, this is as it should be. So right there, as you know, like they say, the program is verse 164 pages. Okay, well, we just read on page 117 that it gets worse, that it doesn't get better. You know, that keep coming back, it gets better. Okay, well, it says right there, no. There's going to be ups and downs. The problems are still going to exist. That's how it's supposed to be, right? So that's a warning, right? The faith and sincerity of both of you and your husband will be put to the test. And I love how he words this. These workouts should be regarded as part of your education, for thus you will be learning to live, right? A workout, it's strenuous. It's, you know, you're tired afterwards, you sweat, you know, but usually the benefits of the workout will present themselves after getting through it, right? So, some cool stuff. So, and then he says, you know, education, learning. Well, what are you learning to do? You're learning to live, right? You will make mistakes, he says. You will make mistakes. But, if you are earnest, they will not drag you down. Instead, you will capitalize them. A better way of life will emerge when they are overcome. Okay, so he's not saying, hey, you know, you gotta... Your husband's going to quit drinking. Your wife's going to quit drinking. Your significant other's going to quit drinking. You're going to be happy. You're both going to be happy. And everything, you know, birds are going to be tweeting. You're going to hear music all the time. Everything's going to be wonderful. He doesn't say that. He says, listen, it's going to be a crap storm. But, you know, if you have faith, because he says that, faith, sincerity, honesty, and faith, you're going to get through it. And once you do, once you overcome that stuff, it's going to be like, oh, wow, look at that. And a lot of times what ends up happening is that the things that people fight about when first in recovery, when first in the program, all that stuff, if they make it to a year later even, that stuff just seems ridiculous, right? Because they're like, wow, we really fought about that. Woo, boy, were we sick, you know? And then you've probably experienced it. Sober couples who are sober a long time and who are together a long time, you see them, they kind of have like, almost like a water off a duck's ass attitude. You know what I mean? Like, just, it just rolls off all the time. You know, you just see them together and like, wow, they just always seem like everything's kind of cool. Meanwhile, they have real stuff that goes on in their lives, but they don't get bogged down by it the way, a less experienced couple may have. Right? That's been my experience, right? Okay, so then he says, some of the snags you will encounter, so I'm just going to let you know what they are, right? Irritation, hurt feelings, and resentments. Your husband will sometimes be unreasonable. Imagine that. And you will want to criticize, right? Okay, starting from a speck on the domestic horizon, great thunderclouds of dispute may gather. These family dissensions are very dangerous, especially to your husband, or to your wife, or to your significant other. Often you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them under control. Never forget that resentment is a deadly hazard to an alcoholic. We do not mean that you have to agree with your husband, wife, significant other, wherever there is an honest difference of opinion. Just be careful not to disagree in a resentful or critical spirit. Okay, so ultimately, that's a basis for detaching. You know, hey, you're just wrong. You know, what's that wonderful expression that everybody loves to throw around? We'll just have to agree to disagree, right? Because that's always, you know, to me, that's antagonistic if you say that to me. Because I usually say, no, you're just wrong, right? So, but, you know, the just that the illustration there, speck, right, to this thundercloud. You know, and it's unfortunate, you know, he's saying it often, you must carry the burden of avoiding them or keeping them, you know, like, I've said this before, I don't agree with absolutely everything in this book, but because it's here, it needs to be discussed and experienced. You know, I don't necessarily think that that's a true statement. You know, that to me, that's just as sick as pretending that somebody's not really a drunk. You know, like, oh, well, you know, I don't really want to upset them. I don't want to upset them because, you know, if I upset them, then they'll drink. And it's like, whoa, wait a minute. There's that enabling thing again, okay? If they're going to drink, they're going to drink. And if they're going to blame it on feelings, well, that's their problem. It's not your problem. Obviously, you don't want to, you know, if you're living a spiritual life, you don't want to create unrest or resentment in somebody's life. That's ultimately, you don't want to be doing that. However, if there's an honest difference of opinion, like, I needed to spend that $100. No, you didn't, because we needed that for groceries, and you didn't need that new shirt or whatever. Okay, that's, you know, that's something there that, okay, let's, it's just a proper disagreement, you know what I mean? It's, but if it's about, like, well, who's a better baseball team, the Yankees or the Mets, like, who cares? You know, like, that's kind of stuff you can say, well, we'll have to agree to disagree, you know, because you're not going to agree on that usually, right? Okay, so continuing, he says, you and your husband will find that you can dispose of serious problems easier than the trivial ones. I know, I've experienced that. I know that, you know, you just can't, something, that little thing, you just can't let go, you know, that minutia that just eats at you all day, you know, like, I mean, I've watched couples, like, bankrupt each other. I've watched, you know, couples cheat on each other, and they're like, oh, I forgive you, but, you know, you keep leaving that seat up. You know, or, well, you keep leaving it down, you know, it's just, well, that's it, ah, you know, and ask anybody who's had some, a relationship in recovery, and they can give you one of those stories, right? Next time, you and he have a heated discussion, no matter what the subject, it should be the privilege of either of you to smile and say, this is getting serious. I'm sorry I got disturbed. Let's talk about it later. If your husband is trying to live on a spiritual basis, he will also be doing everything in his power to avoid disagreement or contention. Now, I don't know too many saints in AA or in the Sister Fellowship. Okay, so, again, that's one of those things, you know, perhaps we can leave out the smile. You know, because usually when, you know, if you're steamed and somebody smiles at you and says, you know, this is getting serious. Let's talk later. You know, like, what is that? That's just lighting a shorter fuse, you know, and boom, what are you talking about? You can't go to sleep, what are you talking about? You know. So, I mean, obviously, it has to be tempered with some reality, right? Okay. Your husband knows he owes you much more than sobriety. Wait a minute, what does that say? He owes you much more than sobriety. Okay, so, again, that's one of those, that's like the antithesis of the all you need to do is stay sober argument. Okay? Because that's not the truth. Okay? He wants to make good, yet you must not expect too much. His ways of thinking and doing are the habits of years. Patience, tolerance, understanding, and love are the watchwords. Show him these things in yourself, and they will be reflected back to you from him. Live and let live is the rule. What was that? A rule? There's no rules in AA. Well, we just read one, didn't we? All right. If you both show a willingness to remedy your own defects, there will be little need to criticize each other. Okay, now this year, like I said, the importance of these chapters are for our own recovery. It's not necessarily that we're dealing with a spouse. It's for our own recovery. Okay, so patience, tolerance, and understanding and love, right? The guy used to say puddle was his thing for that. They're watchwords. Okay, so if we're doing that and we're bringing that into recovery, when we're working with other alcoholics, when we're working with people, if we're bringing patience, tolerance, understanding, and love into the world, because ultimately that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be taking all this spirituality and bringing it into our entire lives, right? All our affairs. So if we're doing that, we become the examples. Okay, and sometimes, and I say sometimes, the world reflects that back to you. Because most of the time the world's in a big hurry and they don't care, and I have to get there first, and don't you know that I got to get to the red light before you do? And, you know, so those things go on. So it becomes like, you know what? You're obviously in a bigger hurry than me, so go ahead, you know. And, you know, and then sometimes, you know, and love is really, it's funny, that whole notion, right? Because it is a notion, because if you ask 100 people what love is, you're going to get 100 different answers. However, one of the things about love is telling somebody the truth, right? Tempered with compassion and understanding. So if somebody is going to do something that's detrimental to themselves or somebody else, the loving thing to do is to let them know, hey, that's just kind of screwed up. That's wrong. Or, you know, even just on a smaller level. If somebody doesn't look good in an outfit and they say, how does this look? You need to be honest. You do. You do. You need to be honest. You could say it in a loving way. You could say, well, you know, it's a nice color, but maybe that color isn't for you. Or maybe, you know, that's not the right cut on you. You could, I mean, that's honest and loving. Okay, so live and let live is the rule. So ultimately, so that's kind of the combination of it. You could say what you need to say. Okay, the expression is say what you mean what you say, and don't say it mean. And then after that, you can, you know, hey, that's on them now, right? Okay, so we women carry with us the picture of the ideal man. And so do us men, let me tell you. The sort of chap or woman we would like our husbands or wives to be. It is the most natural thing in the world. Once his liquor problem is solved, what? His liquor problem is solved? Oh, recovered, huh? Cured, huh? To feel that he will now measure up to that cherished vision, right? The chances are he will not, for like yourself, he's just beginning his development. Be patient. Okay, so that's good advice to us as people who are working with other alcoholics.
Oh, they quit drinking. So now they're going to be honest about everything in their lives.
Right? And it just always amazes me that I experience this, you know, because of how long I'm sober. You have, like, a group of people who maybe collectively have, a month sober. And one person says something. And like two other people agree, and then they go to that person's sponsor, and then that sponsor will come to me and say, you know, you shouldn't be saying that. I said, what are you talking about? Well, they told me this. I said, really? You're going to listen to three people who have less than 30 days of sobriety, and I've been sober 22 years? What's the matter with you? Do you think maybe their perception of what I said could be warped? You think maybe that could be a possibility? So within that framework, somebody who is newly sober, you know, what's that expression we use all the time? I know you're lying because your lips are moving. Right? Because ultimately, that's how we all come in here. We come in here full of crap. Because we don't know anything else. That's how we know how to be. Right? So now we quit drinking. So now all of a sudden we're going to not be full of crap. It just doesn't work like that. I've never seen anybody in all my years like, oh, well, look at that. They quit drinking. They're the most amazing person on the planet. Never. I've never seen that. You know, and I've known nuns and priests that got sober too, okay? So it doesn't, that's why it's good advice. Be patient, right? Another feeling we are likely to entertain is one of resentment, and that love and loyalty, are you ready for this? That love and loyalty could not cure our husbands of alcoholism, or wives, or significant other, could not cure, right? We do not like the thought that the contents of a book or the work of another alcoholic has accomplished in a few weeks that for which we struggled for years. At such moments, we forget that alcoholism is an illness over which we could not possibly have had any power. Right? And that means people we sponsor. And that means people that we work with. And that means people that we are related to. That means anyone. Anyone. We are powerless over alcohol. Okay? In some of our lives, those of us who are recovered or who have been cured, we have power now because the cure is God. And if we have that and we're recovered and that's in our lives, we no longer fear alcohol. We don't have that kind of attitude. However, we still don't have power over alcohol in somebody else's life. Zero. None. We may have it for like 30 seconds if we can wrestle it away from them, but beyond that, they're going to drink. Nothing I can do about that, right? Okay. Your husband will be the first to say it was your devotion and care which brought him to the point where he could have had a spiritual experience. Now, that's a really nice nod to Lois, but that's also an untrue statement. You know, he may be one of the last people to say, oh, it was your devotion and care that, right? Because it's usually other people saying it to you about how you're involved in that relationship. I don't know how you do it. I would have left them a long time ago. Oh, it's your devotion and your care. Okay, that thing, right? Without you, he would have gone to pieces long ago. When resentful thoughts come, try to pause and count your blessings. After all, your family is reunited. Alcohol is no longer a problem. What? Alcohol is no longer a problem. And you and your husband are working together toward an undreamed of future. So, like, I'm reading lots of black and white things that say the same thing that I say all the time that people tell me I'm wrong about in this book called Alcoholics Anonymous. Right?
Okay? Or, oh, I'll never be recovered. I'll never be cured.
You know, what are you talking about? If a problem is solved, it no longer exists. It says it over and over and over in here. Okay, still another difficulty is that you may become jealous. Now, this is really important here. Of the attention he bestows on other people, especially alcoholics. You've been starving for his companionship, yet he spends long hours helping other men and their families. You feel he should know, he should now be yours. The fact is that he should work with other people to maintain his own sobriety. Sometimes he will be so interested that he becomes really neglectful. Your house is filled with strangers. You may not like some of them. He gets stirred up about their troubles, but not at all about yours. It will do little good if you point that out and urge more attention for yourself. We find it a real mistake to dampen his enthusiasm for alcoholic work. You should join in his efforts as much as you possibly can. We suggest that you direct some of your thought to the wives of his new alcoholic friends. They need the counsel and love of a woman who has gone through what you have. All right, now, within that, obviously, let's look at it gender-based, too. It works the same ways. Okay, but anybody who's in a relationship understands this. There needs to be a balance to it. Okay, you know, you can't miss anniversaries. You can't miss Susie or Bobby's concert at school. You know, you can't miss graduations. You can't miss these things because you need to help somebody else. Okay, that is the same thing as trying to play God, right? And so somebody who gets upset about that is right to be upset about that, okay? There needs to be a balance to it. You know, if you're in recovery and you're in a partnership with somebody who's in recovery as well, those things need to be talked about. And your relationship needs to take priority sometimes over alcoholic work, or else the relationship is going to suffer. I know that from experience. On both sides. On the person who is doing the neglecting, and the person who has been neglected. There needs to be a balance. It needs to be tempered. Okay? Other people's lives can't be more important than the person that you say, I love you to. It just cannot be. Right? It just doesn't work. And if that's the case, then, you know, that needs to be examined in people's lives. Okay. It is probably true that you and your husband have been living too much alone, for drinking many times isolates the wife of an alcoholic or the husband of an alcoholic. Therefore, you probably need fresh interests and a great cause to live for as much as your husband. If you cooperate rather than complain, you will find that his excess enthusiasm will tone down. Both of you will awaken to a new sense of responsibility for others. You, as well as your husband, ought to think of what you can put into life instead of how much you can take out. Inevitably, your lives will be fuller for doing so. You will lose the old life to find one much better. Perhaps your husband will make a fair start on the new basis, but just as things are going beautifully, he dismays you by coming home drunk. That bastard. Right? If you are satisfied he really wants to get over drinking, you need not be alarmed. Though it is infinitely better that he have no relapse at all, as has been true with many of our men, it is by no means a bad thing in some cases. Your husband will see at once that he must redouble his spiritual activities if he expects to survive. His spiritual activities, not his meetings. not leaving the house more, his spiritual activities. And as you all know, he missed something. There's some reservation that's getting in the way of his spiritual activities or her spiritual activities. And generally, when this happens, it's because they didn't do the steps. That's been my experience. Usually people relapse because they didn't do the steps. And I say that because if you relapse, it means you really didn't do step one. You didn't fully concede. You may have thought you fully concede, but then if you're holding on to a reservation, you're not fully conceding. Because that means you still have something. You still have, oh, maybe this will work sometime, someplace. Okay? So my experience has been that people who thoroughly do this program never drink again. Never drink again. That's my experience. People are going to argue that all the time. I don't care. All right? It's my experience. It's this book says it. I believe it. It's my own experience because I know, for those of you who know me a little, you know how stubborn I am. So I'm not ever going to give anybody the satisfaction of me drinking again. Right? So they can say I was full of crap for all those years because that's what that would mean. I mean, for all the bravado that I have and talking about being cured of alcoholism through God and talking about being recovered, if I drank, that all that crap would it would just be a big ha-ha for some, and I told you he was all that crap. No way, man. Okay. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. Let me get off that soapbox. Okay. If he expects to survive, that's a key element there, to survive. You need not remind him of his spiritual deficiency. He will know it. Cheer him up and ask him how you can be still more helpful. I mean, these are tall orders, okay? But this is what we're talking, this is what we're putting out there to what the best approach is to helping somebody that you made a commitment to. Now, notice that the chapter says two wives, okay? It could say two husbands. It could say to a significant other or partner. This is the person with whom you took vows in sickness and in health. All those things, right? Okay, so there needs to be more latitude. That's one thing. Like I'm very open with deficiencies in my relationships because I think they could help other people. For me, the things that bother me the most in my relationships are when someone else's stuff, or not necessarily stuff, but I make room for the person that I say I love you, right? Because I'm saying I love you, which means that you're the most important person in my life, outside of God and me, right? You're next. That's what that means. So when I say that, and somebody says that in return, my reasonable expectation is that I can count on emotional support from that person, right? So if somebody tells me, the person who says, I love you, but you need entirely too much emotional support from me. Well, something doesn't equal there for me. Okay, it just doesn't jive. So, because to me, it becomes, in what capacity are you saying, like, too much? Like, what's too much? Do we have a scale? I mean, what are you talking about? Like, okay, so that's kind of sketchy, right? So for me, it becomes, my experience is that when I'm giving and giving and giving in a relationship, expecting nothing in return, generally it gets reflected. But then there becomes a time, so far, because this is my experience, that within the relationship, the person I'm with has expectations that are unreasonable. Okay? And my resistance to those unreasonable expectations become a point of contention. And then emotions shut down and all this stuff. So then it becomes like, okay, so there's some incompatibility instead of, well, are you just giving in the relationship with no expectations? Okay, because I know, I've watched, I grew up, my parents were married 40 years before my father died. And I watch them have each other's happiness uppermost in mind all the time. All the time. My mother took care of my father the last 13 years of his life after he had a stroke and was debilitated and spiraled downward. And even through that time, my father did everything that he could that was in his capacity to keep my mother's happiness uppermost in mind. That's what I experienced. Okay, so that was that's like the benchmark for me. Like, why would I accept anything less in my life? Okay, if I know that that's possible and people can do that. So to me, I look at it from the perspective of if God can make that possible, who am I to settle for something less than what God can give me? Right? That's where I come from. Okay, so that's been my experience of it, right? So then he follows it up with saying, the slightest sign of fear or intolerance may lessen your husband's chance of recovery. In a weak moment, he may take your dislike of his high-stepping friends as one of those insanely trivial excuses to drink, right? Now, this is important here, right? This is a follow-up. This is another antithesis of the crap you hear in meetings about what recovered and newly recovering alcoholics must do. This is the opposite of that. We never, never try to arrange a man's life so as to shield him from temptation. Never. We never do that. Oh, can't go to that wedding. There's alcohol there. Oh, we can't go to that restaurant. They serve alcohol there. Oh, we can't be on earth because they serve alcohol there. Right? Okay, the slightest disposition on your part to guide his appointments or his affairs so he will not be tempted will be noticed. It's called treating them like a child, right? Make him feel absolutely free to come and go as he likes. This is important. Right? If he gets drunk, don't blame yourself. That's it. If somebody gets drunk, don't blame yourself. Unless you poured it down their throat. Then it's your fault. Until then, it's not your fault, right? Now here's the biggest one. Here's the argument. Here's the sentence of all of my arguments of being recovered and being cured through Alcoholics Anonymous and their opinion of it. God has either removed your husband's liquor problem or he has not. There's no gray there. End of story. Right? If not, right? It had better be found out right away. Don't waste 10 years waiting. Find out right away. Right? Then you and your husband can get right down to fundamentals. If a repetition is to be prevented, place the problem, alcoholism, along with everything else, your life, in God's hands. Right? We realize that we've been giving you much direction and advice. We may have seemed to lecture. If that is so, we are sorry for we ourselves don't always care for people who lecture us. Bless you. But what we have related is based upon experience, some of it painful. We had to learn these things the hard way. That is why we are anxious that you understand and that you avoid these unnecessary difficulties. So to you out there, who may soon be with us, we say, good luck and God bless you. Right? Now, at the bottom of the page, this is something that I have contention with. Despite being a member, this is an endorsement for a different 12-step fellowship, okay? And within our traditions, we do not lend the AA name to any outside enterprises, okay? And here it is, in our big book, we're lending our name to an outside enterprise. So what that does is it leaves us open to any other fellowship or any other cause or any other outside issue to come in and start saying, hey, well, you know, this is part of AA. Like, there's groups that use particular books for steps 6 and 7 and run entire workshops on them that have absolutely nothing to do with AA. But as the result of this breach of our traditions, it makes it possible to do that. Right? Now, don't mistake me for saying that AA is the only thing that's important and it's the only spiritual route to anything. That's not my philosophy at all. However, I believe that AA is AA. And you have to keep things AA. Or else it opens it up to any other thing to come in and make it part of AA. Like, don't drink and go to meetings. Like, 90 meetings and 90 days. Those things have absolutely nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. Zero. That's outside stuff coming in and influencing AA. Okay, so that's important to note that, because we are stewards of the traditions as well. Not just of the steps and the program, of the traditions and the concepts. Okay, the 12 concepts of service. That's a whole different day of sharing, if you will.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.